Okay, when Yutas Amid Beis 19b1. Rav Kahana said a statement before in the Gemara, which is relevant to know, that a person is not allowed to keep a what's called shtar amana. Shtar amana means a document that was written on trust. Remember last week we were talking, sometimes they would write a document on trust. So the Mishnah was discussing if witnesses say that we signed such a document, they're not believed because we can't assume that witnesses would sign on such a document. Because a document that you write on trust, meaning you write a document that I will lend you money even though it's not happening yet. You know, you can't do that. So he says that from Rav Kahana we learned that witnesses that say that we signed a document that was shtar amana, he said we don't believe him because such a document is not a kosher document and therefore you're not allowed to leave it in the house. Okay? Now the Gemara says like this. Amar Rav Yehoshua ben Levi. Yehoshua ben Levi says, Bechlal, let me just give an introduction. Where are you going? Your test, Amid Beis. Back, all the way back. What daf you have? What page you have?
Okay, got it.
Okay. There's a din, like we find in the Torah, you're not allowed to deal with non-kosher weights. Right? With false weights. Not only you're not allowed to do business with non-kosher weights, the Torah says you can't even keep them in your house. It's biblically forbidden to keep non-kosher weights and measurements in your house. Why? Because, God forbid, somebody else, not you maybe, but somebody else might not know that they're not kosher weights and they'll come to you. Okay, so there's din and Torah as a fence around the Torah that you're not allowed to keep non-kosher things in your house. So the same thing Rishu ben Levi says like this. It's forbidden for a lender to keep a note that after was paid up. The first, if I have a note that you owe me $1,000 and you paid me $1,000, I'm not allowed to keep the note in my house. Why? Even if I'm an honest guy. For a very simple reason. One day I'll die. My kids will see this note in the house. They won't know that the guy paid. They'll come and want to collect the money of $1,000. Right? So something bad, even if I'm an honest person, but something bad can come from it. So therefore you're not allowed to keep in the house. And he quotes the Pasuk, Shenema, because the Pasuk says, Al tashkim b'yolech avla. Don't have injustice dwell in your tent. A document that was paid is injustice because it's a worthless document, but people won't know that it's worthless because it was paid up, and therefore you're not allowed to keep it. But Marav and Mishmei the Rav in Eretz Yisrael, they said in the name of Rav like this, Im Avim B'yotcha, if something perverted is in your hand, Harchikeil, keep it far away. What does that refer to? The Gemara says, Zeshtar Amana, a document written on trust. It wasn't even a debt yet, and the guy wrote it that maybe a debt will take place. Or shtar pasim. Shtar pasim is a note of persuasion, meaning a guy persuaded a friend to write a note that he should look like he has a lot of money. People, besides for the IRS, like people to think they're rich people. It's human nature. Except they don't want the IRS to know, they don't want rabbis to know that they have a lot of money. Okay? So what would they do? They would get a friend to write a note that let's say I'm your friend, right? You would come to me and say, do me a favor. Write a note that I owe you $10,000. So then you'll show everybody the note. You see, this guy owes me $10,000 and this guy owes me, so I have a lot of money. I'm lending all these people money. But it's not a real document. It's false. You just trust the guy that never come and collect it. Right? So such a document is also a false document. Because it's no such loan. The guy did it. They should sound like he's a rich guy. So what happened? One day the guy might die. Then his kids will see this promissory note that he owes him $1,000 and then they'll go collect it. Innocently.
Unless he issues another one concurrently.
Yeah, but that's what they didn't do. This was just one document they would write.
Could be a check too.
Huh?
somebody's holding a check and then they got paid, but they have the check still at the
front. Right. They only show the front of the check, not the back of the check, that it was paid.
No. I mean, they just have it as a security, but they got paid. This was check, and which never was voided.
I know. I understand what you're saying. In fact, that's the first part of the pasuk. Then the pasuk concludes, "Al tashkim by alecha avla." Don't let injustice dwell in your tent. That refers to shtar perua, a document that was paid. So the first half of the pasuk is talking about a document that never was real. It was either you will maybe lend me money, or just a promissory note to look rich. And the second half of the pasuk speaks about a document that was written truthfully. There was a loan, but he paid it up. So now the loan is a false note. So all these things, the Gemara says you're not allowed to have in your house.
Mezuzah, if it's not kosher, you cannot keep it at home, the same thing? Is it the same category or a different reason?
A lot of times they would write puzzle on it.
Oh, the sofa writes puzzle?
Somebody would write puzzle, on the back at least. Because the bottom line is, yeah, if you keep a mezuzah or sefer Torah, people will come to use it. Now, the Gemara says like this. Man the Yomer Shtar Perua, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who says a paid up document is called injustice, Koshkein Amana. Definitely a trust document is for sure false. Because a paid document means at one time it was a kosher document, right? It was written properly, but now they got paid it up. So if that's no good, if that's an avla, if that's a injustice, a document written on credit is for sure an injustice. But a person who says only a shtar amana, meaning a document that was written that maybe I trust you that you'll lend me the money, but shtar peru alay, but the paid document is not necessarily called an injustice. That means like this. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said you cannot hold a shtar perua in your house. And he says that's called an injustice. Rav says no, you can't hold a shtar amon in the house. Because that's injustice. So he said, which one of the two are more injustice? A note was called shtar amon, that you're writing, write me a note, I'll lend you $1,000, even though I might not do it. That's more false, that's more injustice, because that was never kosher, versus a document that was kosher and paid up. So now the Gemara says like this. Itman, okay, this is something like you said about mezuzah, but he's walking away. Itmar says like this. From all these dinim, the bottom line, the Gemara says, you cannot keep injustice things in your house. Like we said, you can't keep false weights. You can't keep documents. Okay, see, I didn't finish last time. Zimna de mashleya pshita de safim. Why would the lender keep the document if it's paid? Why would the lender keep the document if it's paid?
You lose it.
No. There's another reason. Very simple, the Gemara says. If I lend you $1,000, okay, now you need to write the document. Who pays for the document? The lender or the borrower?
The borrower. Lender.
Argument in the Gemara.
Charge to the borrower.
The borrower has to pay for it. Because... why should the lender pay for it? The borrower is getting the favor. It's not ribis, it's not interest, because you're not paying it to the lender. You're paying it to write the document. Right? Now, so we write a document. The lender has the document, but the borrower never paid for it yet. To the safer. Okay? Now he pays up the debt. Correct? What guarantee, what collateral does he have for the borrower to pay the safer?
Who?
The lender.
It's not his business.
Good, but, you know, the safer did him a favor.
Not the lender, he's off.
The lender did that, he wrote a document, that is documented.
He did it for a borrower.
I understand. The borrower is supposed to pay for it.
But the lender appointed him, so he feels responsible.
So he feels a little responsible. So sometimes the Gemara says the lender will hold on to the document Because the note says the borrower owes the lender the money. Until the borrower pays up the sefer. So it's not so corrupt. Like the Gemara said before, if you hold a paid document in your house, it's an injustice, it's not a good piece of paper. Why are you holding it if it's already paid? So the Gemara says it's not always that bad. Because if you're holding his collateral for him to pay up, the borrower to pay up the scribe, I don't know what's in legal law. Who does it in legal law?
Non-documented, paid by the borrower.
By the borrower.
Unless the banks that have some special program, they say that we pay for everything.
Okay. closing fee.
Included.
A sale.
They paid a mortgage too. Okay. What?
Is there any difference between avla and injustice and misleading people? Or is it the same thing? The reason that you don't... I thought it's because of misleading. It doesn't say that.
The question is it called avla or im oven biyotcha chikeyu? If there's something bad, keep it away. So the question is, which one's worse? The shtar amana is worse. Because that was never kosher.
Why is it not justice?
It's injustice.
It's misleading, no?
That's injustice.
The same thing?
Mm. Injustice means it's not proper. If it's misleading, it's not proper. Okay, Itmar, it says like this. Based on what we learned just now in the Gemara says like this. Sefer Shein Amugim. A sefer, meaning a book of scriptures, that wasn't corrected from all the mistakes. Okay? In other words, like this. There were no printing presses, right? Somebody had a sefer Tanakh, it was written over. So, it's inevitable to have mistakes there. So what did they do? After it was written, they checked it over. To make sure that the proper letters, no missing words, whatever. To make sure it's proper, right? So it says, you're not...
How did they check that somebody would sit down and do all...
Yes. Yep. That's what they do.
Like the Rebbe's Ma'amori, Rebbe would check it, right?
Yeah, but that's a different... Here's Mamish, word by word, they would check and say, Fetayim. So he says, Amr Avami, how long can you keep it in the house? Because also, it might not be a kosher safer. And then they'll use it for Torah reading, or they'll use it for whatever. So he says like this, Atshlei Shem Yoim, Mutter l'sheisei. Up to 30 days, you're allowed to keep it in your house. Mikan ve'elach, after 30 days, also l'sheisei, you're not allowed to keep it. More. Why? Shenema al tashkim b'yolech avla, injustice should not dwell in your tent. How long is dwelling? Like we know from mezuzah. How long do you have to live in a place to have a mezuzah? 30 days. So therefore, 30 days is dwell. So the pasuk says, don't have injustice dwell in your tent. It means 30 days. So, by the way, any books, by the way, it might be halachic errors, you know, handwritten manuscripts, need to be checked, because they might have errors in halacha. For instance, it might say kosher, and it should have said not kosher. So you know that's going to say, the halacha is going to say kosher when it's not kosher. So it's like it's a terrible mistake. So you need to make sure that all the books in your house are edited.
Is it halacha by sofer too? He has like 30 days to check the mezuzah if someone brings him to check.
Bechlau, when the sefer writes a mezuzah, they have somebody else check it always.
No. If we bring it to sofer to check it for us, he has the same thing. Like he has 30 days to check it.
No, you should check it as soon as possible.
But this doesn't apply by him, the more than 30 days? Why not? Is it the same thing?
No, it's not an injustice. I'm saying, over there, the guy, meanwhile, the guy doesn't have mezuzahs in his house.
No, I mean, if he doesn't check it for any reason in his house and leaves it there for more than 30 days, is it considered the same avla or not?
No.
He has in his house something?
Yeah, but it was already checked before, so it was already checked once. You need to recheck it, but it was already checked once. Amen Rav Nachman said like this, based on what we ruled before. The case, so far the Gemara was talking before we got into this stuff, that if witnesses say a document they signed wasn't kosher, we don't believe them. That's what the Gemara said before. Because we assume witnesses, if they sign a document, they know it's a kosher document. That the loan actually happened. Not that the loan maybe will happen, or it's a credit loan, or maybe it will, no. Witnesses will not sign a document. This is what the Gemara says. There's an assumption. Witnesses will not sign on a document. Kosher witnesses will not sign on a document unless they know it's 100% kosher. Therefore, if witnesses come and they say, this that we signed was not kosher, the Mishnah said, we don't believe them. Because the fact that the signature is on the paper shows that they signed it properly. So, Amar Rav Nachman, Eidim Sha'amar Amana Hayadivreinu. It says, witnesses that say that our signature was only based on trust. We didn't actually see the loan happen. Ein amonim, they're not believed. Like we said before, because normally, though they would sign, it would be a kosher document. What happens if they said, Maida hayadvareinu, that they, you know, the witness signed, and later they said that there were, Maida means, I'm announced, usually it refers to a forged document. For instance, a guy writes a document, I owe you $1,000. Yeah? And before he writes the document, he says, I don't want to sign this document. I don't want to write the document. I'm being forced. They're forcing me to write this document. I don't want to write it.
Under duress.
Under duress. Yeah? So he says, what happens if witnesses sign the document, and later they come and they say, before this document was signed, the guy told us it was under duress. So again, the Gemara said they're still not believed to say that. Why? Because the fact that they signed the document testifies that it was a kosher document. Now they want to change their testimony to say it wasn't kosher. It's not believed.
They were forced, anything?
No, they say this document that we signed on was a forced document. But obviously they were also forced, so to speak, to sign it.
Why they can't say that
they were forced?
The honest people, they say, no, well, they were forced. Maybe it happened,
actually. Okay, we'll see. The Gemara's going to say. There's another opinion here. We're going to see both opinions. So the first opinion of the Gemara, of Nachman, says that if a guy, two witnesses say that this document we signed was not an actual loan, it was going to, like a credit loan, right? This is going to take place. Or Moda that this document was accursed under duress, they're not believed. Mar Baravashi argues and he says like this. Hamana yodavreinu, if they say it was like a later loan that's gonna be, it's gonna be sometime later, ain't amana, they're not believed. Moda hayodavreinu, but if they said our testimony was preceded by under duress, namonim, then they are believed. Rav Ashi argues on Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says if witnesses come and they say, yes, we signed the document, but later, before the document was signed, it was under duress, Rav Nachman says they're not believed. Rav Ashi says they are believed. He says, why? My time, what's the difference? One second. He says like this. Hi, Nitan Likosif. One was allowed to be written, and one was not allowed to be written. Okay? Why? Because, let's say, the case is, let's say, he gives an example, the buyer, the seller and the buyer. Yeah? A buyer comes and forces the guy to write a document that he sold him his house. Yeah? Are the witnesses allowed to sign or not?
They have a choice not to. They're not under duress. The guy, the
yeah,
salary.
But if the document doesn't get filled, the guy's going to get beat up.
So they're also testifying that we also, as witnesses, signed under duress.
Yeah, but the point is, because it was under duress, it was still a document that they were allowed to sign, not that because the document is real, but because of the pressure, right? They were allowed to sign it. A document that the loan, right? A document that maybe a year from now he'll lend me the money. That is never a kosher document to sign. They're not allowed to sign it. Here, even though the document is not true, but halachically they were allowed to sign it. So therefore they're not changing their testimony. Because when they sign the document, witnesses are basically saying, we are allowed to sign this document, and therefore we're signing it. So if, according to Mar Bar Avashi, Rav Nachman disagreed, but according to the second opinion, if they said the guy was forced to sign it, and therefore he had no choice but to sign it, they were allowed to sign it to save somebody. But in the first case, when it's a sign the paper that maybe in a year from now will lend me the money, that they're not allowed to sign. It was never a kosher document. And that's why he differentiates between that and could do it.
Can you explain what is the case of forcing someone to write?
Learn before in the Gemara, you can have a number of cases. Machmas Nefashis, Machmas Mamin. The guy said, they could rescue the guy from the buyer's threats. The buyer's threatening the seller. Okay, let's say, right? The buyer's threatening the seller. He's a big stachvan, a big guy, a dangerous guy, yeah? He's forcing the seller to write a document that he sold the house. Correct? He didn't want to sell it, he had no choice. Correct? If the witnesses didn't sign it, the buyer would get beat up. I'm sorry, the seller would get beat up. So now, halachically, if they would ask a shayla, are we allowed to sign the document to save this guy from getting beat up? Halachically, they could sign it. Right? Therefore, when they signed it, was it a kosher signature? It was a kosher signature. Now they're coming along, and they're saying, but it's not really a good signature. We're allowed to sign it to save the guy from the beat up, but it's not a kosher document. So that matter, but Rav Ashi said, that they believe to say. It's something like a pesha or a pesha hitter.
But in the case
where the right shtar amana, meaning I trust you that you're going to lend me the money in a year, and therefore I'm going to write the note now. Yeah, there's absolutely no reason halachically why they would be allowed to sign the document. It never happened. It might not happen. How could witnesses sign the document that a loan took place if there was no loan that took place? Maybe in a year from now it'll end, maybe in a month from now, they can't sign such a document. So therefore, when they signed the document, and now they're coming to disqualify their own testimony, they're not believed. Because we assume that if they signed the document, it had to be a kosher real document. Otherwise they wouldn't have signed it. Right? So by them signing it, they testified that it took place. Now they want to change their testimony? You can't change your testimony.
Would it apply in here that before they are asked to testify, they go and to Beit Din and say, by the way, like just in the prior cases, where they actually volunteer on their own before they're asked to say that you are...
By the way, the halacha is in a similar case. If a guy is forced to sign a document, okay, and before that he goes over to two witnesses, quietly, and says, I want you to know, this document I'm writing now, I'm forced to do it, is against my will. Yeah? Those two witnesses go to Beis Din later and they testify that this guy signed, not the witnesses that signed the document. Those are another two witnesses. That I signed the document was against my will. Yeah? They're believed.
The witnesses are also believed to go and say to the Beis Din that we witnessed that this was under duress.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're believed to. It's only after if they
but there's a little bit difference between if the witnesses themselves signed the document or it's two other witnesses.
I see.
Let's say, if I write a note, no witnesses, I write a note myself. I owe you $1,000. Yeah? I don't need witnesses because it's my own writing. I owe you, it's my admission, right, that I owe you $1,000, correct? But you're forcing me to write that. I'm afraid of you. You gotta, you know, you're gonna kidnap my family, whatever you're gonna do, yeah? I have no choice but to write it. But I don't want it to be a legal document. So what do? When the guy's not around, I tell two witnesses, I want you to, this thing I'm signing now is because I'm forced to sign it. I really don't want to. Then he goes to the witness, go to the Bezdin, and they nullify the document. The problem over here is if two witnesses sign the document,
yes,
and then they're coming along saying that this was not a real document, this is a trust document that maybe in a year from now I'll lend them the money, so they were not allowed to sign the document. They were not allowed to sign it, correct? Now that they did sign it, Bezdin says that it must have been a kosher document. Otherwise you wouldn't have signed it, because you're not allowed to sign it. So now that you signed it, we assume that's kosher. Now you're coming along and saying it's not kosher. Right? You can't change your testimony. And therefore Bezdin says you're not believed. Rav Nachman holds in all cases he's not believed. Because even if it was under duress, he shouldn't have signed it. Mar Bar Avashi says, no, they do sign it.
He shouldn't have signed it because it's Abla?
Yeah. Yep.
It makes sense, because if you are worried about the Abla in other cases, we should...
The Gemara said before a statement that Ein Eidem Chay, the top of the Yutas Emerald, Chazaka, Ein Eidem Chay Smeral Ashtar, Em Kei Nase Begodl. It was done correctly. Otherwise, witnesses are not going to sign a document that deals with a kid lending the money, or this, or whatever it is. Witnesses don't, there's a chazaka, there's an assumption. Yeah? That a person signs a document, it's a kosher document.
If someone, like you said, forced, like someone, he writes something, you know what, I owe this guy $1 million. According to the halacha, has a validity? Even though he was forced, he was the signature. Can he come in, you know what, I was forced?
He can't come out. He needs to have two. No, that's what halacha is. Before he signs it.
No, he doesn't have anybody right now.
It's valid.
It's valid, yeah?
Wow. How do you know it's under duress? How do you know you're forced?
Maybe he's lying.
Bezdin looks at a document. Listen. Bezdin sees a document. They can only go, they're not prophets, right? They need to go by what they see or testimony. Yeah? I bring a document that you owe me $1 million. Right? Now you're gonna say, no, I was under the, why should Bezdin believe you? Do you prove it? If you can prove that you were forced to sign it, yeah, Bezdin will say, then we believe you. How are you gonna prove now that a year ago you were forced to sign a document that you owe me $1 million? How are you gonna prove it? The only one way of doing it, the Gemara says, is to call over two witnesses and say, listen, this document that I'm signing now, I want you to know the guy forced me to write it. I wasn't interested in writing it.
Legally, in America, if somebody writes something with his signature, it's valid, right?
Of course.
The next, I know what I was.
According to Halacha, it's even better than witnesses.
Wow.
Hados Baldin, Kameid, but it's even stronger. If two witnesses say, you don't owe him the money. Not for it. And his signature says, I owe you $1 million. That's stronger than anything else. Do you know, according to Halacha, but they just told somebody you have to fix the ksuba, but, I mean, they didn't write it yet, but between the bottom line of the document, the witness says sign underneath, right? Between the bottom line of the document, whether ksuba, whatever it is, and the signature of the witnesses, is not allowed to be an empty line of space. Why? Afterwards, the guy can add, and by the way, you owe me $1 million. They always tell you, even when you write a check, yeah? They teach you the proper way of writing a check, because if I write a check to you, I write Moshe on the check, yeah? $1,000 check. And somebody finds the check. And after the word Moshe, they add, and Reuven. Or Reuven. He can cash the check. Because the check is made out to Moshe or Reuven. Right? And if I write 10, and then technically they could write, I meant 10, they could write 10,000. If there's space, and they change the numbers, and the legal thing anyway is what's written, right? So they tell you, if I just write 10, and even if I make a line, but I don't make it right next to the 10, you know what I'm talking about? So the guy can write 10,000. They always tell you when you write a check, you have to make sure there's no empty spaces where anybody, yeah, to our line or whatever, that that guy can't add anything in the document. So therefore, the halacha is when witnesses, there's a ksuba, a guy, you know, they're on the computer. I said to him, there's too much space, there's a ksuba. I said, there's too much space between the written, the, where the witnesses are supposed to sign and the bottom line of the document. Because then the husband can add on his own $1 million. I mean, the wife can add, and the ksuba is also another $1 million.
Can you add to the ketubah?
You could, but we don't do it today because, you know, a lot of problems. It's rather than a customer doing it.
Wow. There's a standard text of Chabad.
Not Chabad, hello.
Yeah. No, the ketubah, that's normal.
Yeah, it's a normal text. Sula gets 200, Grush or divorcee or widow gets 100. That's it.
In general.
By Svadin, the Oriyat story is not very long ago. That, you know, everybody's in love and they're very wealthy families and he want to impress everybody. So they write to Ksuba for $500,000 and this. And then 2 months later they get divorced. Or a year later they get whatever it is. And then they start to, you owe me the $500,000. And it's a legal document. In Halach, it's a legal document. Right? So therefore, in Ashkenazim, they only write 100 and 100, and that's it, 200. Finished.
Is that
but they stopped it by the Sfardim also, because of all these issues that came up. This is what I was told. That the Sfardim Shirabanim don't write any more the big amounts.
Is that also a legal document for the, to enforce in the...
Depends on the judge.
In Iran, you used to write big amount.
Big amounts.
Big amount, ketubah. Impress.
Impress everybody.
Yeah.
Was it collectible in court?
Usually, we never had too many divorces in Iran. It wasn't
the
issue.
Yeah, but somebody died.
Oh, yeah.
And then the woman would go to the estate and collect. No, I mean, you have the. Especially if it was the second wife who's in a fight with the kids and the first wife. You know what I mean?
It happens all the time.
Yes. But she still collects. She's still an almana. She got, you know.
In America, if someone wants to get divorced, as we said, they go by what is in the ketubah, or
no.
They go half and half, religious people.
California.
No, you go by, there's a lot of state laws involved. I told we mentioned Sunday. The reason why they don't collect the ketubah today usually, because in the settlement they get more than the ketubah even. So it's like,
can't be
both. Right. Okay, let's start the next piece of Gemara. Boy, mine Rava Merav Nachman. So Rava asked a question from Merav Nachman. What happens if witnesses say like this? We signed the document, it was a kosher document, but Tanai Hoya Devereinu. The guy that wrote the document stipulated conditions. And we don't know if the conditions were met. In other words, we signed the document, the loan took place, or the sale took place, right? But, and the sale took place, we signed it, but there were conditions attached to the document. Now, if the conditions were met, the sale is valid. If the conditions are not met, then the sale is not valid. So the witnesses come to Bez, and they say, listen, we signed that document, it was 100% sale, everything good, but there are conditions, and we don't know if the conditions were met or not. Are they believed to say that? So that was his question. So the question is like this. Do we say when it's, you know, document was written with a notification of duress, or it was a trust document, over there, they uproot the document completely. In the case that we had before in the Gemara, when they say it was under duress, or it was a shtar, maybe a loan will be a year later. In those cases, they uprooted the whole shtar. It never happened. But, and in this case, also, they're uprooting the shtar. Because if they say the condition wasn't met, then the sale is not valid, then the document is not valid. Aydema, do we say, Tanai milsa achriti, condition is something else. In other words, the document is good, there's a second issue, a separate issue if the condition was met. In other words, when they say it was a condition, are they uprooting the document? Or are they saying the document is a kosher document? There's a side issue if the condition was met. And that's nothing to do with our signature. So yes, Rav Nachman, what's the din? Which one is it?
Condition in the past or in the future they're going to do this? Because they are not around Edim to know what's going on.
That's what they said, we don't know. So they believed to say that there were conditions attached.
But the condition right now or is it about the future?
No.
What kind of condition? Like if
the condition
this,
was there at the time of the sale. There were oral conditions that the sale would be valid if A, B, and C happen.
Okay?
Now the witnesses come along later and they say, listen, we signed a document. We don't know if the conditions were met or not. So the question is, are they nullifying the whole document by saying what they're saying? Or are they saying the document remains a good document?
Only the condition.
The condition, and that's nothing to do with their signature. So the Rav Nachman said to him a very interesting case. He answered him like this. Ki also the kamon ladina. When such a case happens, they come to us. Amrin and lehu, we say to them, zil kaima tenayachu, we say to the buyers, do the conditions, v'chaytza ledin, and then come to the din Torah. In other words, Rav Nachman said the whole question is irrelevant. Because anytime such a document with conditions come, we tell the buyers, first do the conditions. Then you'll come back to us and we'll talk. So you don't need the witnesses testifying. There's no witnesses yet. Because what you're saying is, come back when you fulfill the conditions and we'll talk.
And if he did it?
Then the sale's a good sale. Then the witnesses are good. That means according to Rav Nachman, he says the witnesses are believed that the document is good. But they'll go fulfill the condition.
No matter what.
They're not nullifying the document, because if they nullify the document, then there's no document. So Rav Nachman says to the guys, go do your conditions, because the document is a kosher document, and then we'll talk details. Okay.